Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to be back here at our home church, Beaver Baptist. We've been privileged. As I was thinking about it, we started coming here in 1989. I know there's some of you here that can't even remember 1989 because you weren't born yet, but we started coming here back in 1989 when we were living down the road at Waltington Estates and getting ready to go to Senegal. So we've had the privilege of being associated with Beaver Baptist Church since that time. And glad to have everybody here today to see all familiar faces, see some friends who have come from other places to fellowship with us this morning. And just want to say first and foremost, thank you for your support and prayers for us as we serve there in West Africa. We've actually been stateside for the last 4 months since the end of August, and this is the first time I've had the opportunity to get here. Debbie's been here once or twice, but we've done a lot of traveling. We've been everywhere from Michigan to Missouri and New York and Wisconsin, so we've been doing a lot of traveling. I think if we have get a few more miles, the van that we bought right when we came back will have 10,000 miles. We'll have put 10,000 miles on it, so in 4 months' time. So by the grace of God, safe travel, and we thank you again for your prayers for that for us as we've been traveling around, visiting our supporting churches, and sharing a little bit about the ministry that God has committed to us there in Senegal. Before I forget, if any of you are receiving our newsletter by email, please make sure we have your current email address. We know that email addresses change. In fact, ours are supposed to change at some point in the next year or so. So we'll be sure and let you know about that. But if anybody's getting our newsletter and they have a different email address or prefer to get it at a different address, let us know. What are you trying to tell me, Deb? Okay, that was next. Okay. Also, if you happen to be getting our newsletter by mail, by U.S. Postal Service, and you would prefer just to get it by email, please let us know and we can send it to you by email instead. It's the same base. Actually, we send out updates about every month, and then twice a year we generally mail a newsletter. So if you would prefer to get that by get everything by email, we can do that. Actually saves us a few shekels. So appreciate that if you want to do that. But if you want it mailed, we're still happy to mail it to you. So, and we again want to just thank you for your support, your interest, and your prayers for us as we serve. We actually go back to Senegal on Friday, this coming Friday, leaving out of Pittsburgh. We fly to Washington, D.C., and from Washington we fly direct to Senegal. And so we, by this time next week, Lord willing, we should be back there enjoying some a little bit warmer weather, not enjoying the dust, but that we hear is in the air, which is typical of this time of year. But we appreciate your prayers for us as we travel this coming week back to Senegal to begin our, well, we're in the middle, I guess, of our 28th year of service there. We've been there since 1991. And so the last July, we celebrated 27 years there in Senegal. So we're about the middle, I guess, of our 28th year. So again, thank you for your support and prayers. I'd like to share a little bit of an update with you on some of the things that have been happening since the last time we were here. Now, we were here a year ago. I think we came home for our annual medical checkups. Debbie, of course, as you know, had some serious medical issues a number of years ago, and her doctor wants her to come back every year for a checkup. And so last year we were here, and I think I shared some of these things last year. Some are newer things that have happened more recently. But I'd like to just share a little bit of update of what we've been doing over the last year or two. We were here two years ago for a little bit longer time, and typically we come home every 2 years for 4 to 6 months. So some of this is you may remember, but some of this is new, and I'll be sharing some prayer requests as well. And hopefully, when we're done, which what time Sunday school end? 11:15? Quarter of? We'll have time for some questions if anybody has any questions. So okay, could we perhaps turn the lights down up front here? I don't know if it'd be easier to see the screen, or
we can turn them off. Though.
Well, okay, if it's yeah, that would be good for me, yeah, because they're kind of right in my eyes. It's fine when you know when I'll be reading later, but yeah, this will give you just a little bit of an overview. I'm going to be talking about, I think most of you are aware that our new name is Ethnos 360 as of last year, New Tribes Mission, by the name by which our mission was known since 1942, since it was founded. The leadership decided to change it last year to make it a little bit more, I don't want to say politically correct, that's not the right term. A little bit more access friendly to some certain places where the name mission or the name tribes could be seen as a pejorative or derogatory in some sense, and particularly in majority Muslim countries where the word mission, and certainly one word you never want to use in a Muslim country is crusade. That's a real negative word in a Muslim dominated society. But mission too can be a bit of a negative, have a negative connotation. So they decided on Ethnos 360, and I'll be showing a little bit more a video in during the worship service and talking a little bit more about that. So we are with Ethnos 360, working in West Africa. And we are in the country of Senegal, but actually the regional, a number of years ago we adopted a regional approach, and so now we're working in the field of West Africa, but in the country of Senegal. And for those of you who may not know where Senegal is, we're right on the western coast. In fact, the capital city of Dakar, which is right here, is the westernmost point on the continent of Africa. So we're the closest point to the continental United States. It's about an 8-hour flight, again, from Washington to Senegal. The airport is no longer in the capital city. It's just outside, and we'll be showing that a little bit. But this is the country we live in. We live in the capital city of Dakar, right here on the westernmost point of the continent, on the peninsula. And we have missionaries working in several areas in Senegal, here around Thiès with the Safi people, down here with the Bainouk, and the Jola Kassa and the Jola Kera, and then further on down towards the center of the country with the Bajaranke, and you know Eric and Wendy Sotomayor. Their village is right about here, just a little west of Medina Gounas. And then further on down, right at the bottom corner, we have missionaries working with the Jalunga and an associate missionary working with the Malinke. And did I leave anybody out? Oh, yeah, the Konyagi. And then we have people who, it's interesting in Africa, the people groups are not confined to certain countries. Most of the people groups that are found in Senegal are also found in this country of the Gambia, which is a separate country here, English-speaking country, stuck into the side of Senegal, and then down here in Guinea and Guinea-Bissau, we also have other of the same people group, same language, people speaking the same language, living on the other side of these borders. So the borders were kind of artificially drawn, and so we have the same people groups on both sides, and also up into Mauritania, and over into Mali, but we're not, I guess the Jalunga, yeah, are in Mali. We're working with them in Senegal, but they're also in Mali as well. I love this slide, and I don't know if you can see very well the outlines here, but just to help us get a better idea of how big Africa is, this is how the continental United States, the lower 48, would fit into West Africa. And this, the area that we work in here is about this. So it covers about the western third of the United States, is a land area that would be equivalent to the western third of the United States. China would fit into Africa. So would India. Eastern, all of Eastern Europe and the countries of Italy, Germany, France, Spain would all fit into Northern Africa. And down there you have the United Kingdom, which would basically fit into Madagascar, Japan. So it gives you an idea of how big the continent of Africa is. And so I like that, that graphic. By the way, the Kemps, I think you know the Kemps, they live down here in South Africa. Okay? We're here in West Africa. It's 9 hour flight, 8 to 9 hour flight, depending on the winds, from Washington to, Senegal. It's another 9 hour flight down to South Africa. So, again, just to give you a little bit of a scale of the continent of Africa there. So, here we are. Okay. Just want to say another thank you. I know we mentioned it last year. 2 years ago when we were here, we asked for prayer for our pastor's wife, Alice Autry. And I know that you prayed. Many other people prayed. And we believe very strongly that it was an answer to prayer that on May 2nd, 2017, Alice was acquitted of all charges against her. Alice is the wife of our associate pastor, Pastor William Autry. When she arrived in Senegal back in November of 2013, she had checked 2 bags when she left her home country of Ghana. When she arrived, she only had 1 bag, and she made a claim for it. She never saw the bag again, but about a month after she arrived in the country, she was arrested for having brought drugs into the country in that bag that was lost, that she never even saw. She spent 3 years and 4 months in prison before her case finally went to trial. We visited Alice every week, and we found ourselves oftentimes being encouraged by her trust in the Lord, her attitude of faith. Yes, there were times where it was extremely, extremely difficult for her and her family, but she continued to trust the Lord, and this was the day, this was the Sunday after she was released. She actually was acquitted on a Tuesday, but they didn't release her until Wednesday because the papers didn't get there from the court in time to release her that day. So she spent an extra night in prison, even though she'd been acquitted. No, sorry, we made a mistake or anything like that, but she was very thankful. I didn't sense the slightest amount of bitterness on her part. She was praising the Lord. They spent about a month there in Senegal and went around and thanked all the groups, the prayer groups and Bible study groups and churches, other churches that have been praying for her. And now they're back in their home country. They returned to the country of Ghana, and they're ministering there in Ghana. So again, just thank you for your prayers for Alice. We believe, again, she was released in answer to your prayers and the prayers of God's people around the world. Last year, August, I took a trip as part of my responsibility as the security coordinator for the Field of West Africa. I took a trip with two of our security officials from our headquarters in Florida, had flown over, and we took a trip out to Mali, out to the country of Mali, and then on to Burkina Faso. This was southern Mali. That was the road from Kédougou in southern Senegal out to the border with Mali, which they were working on. And as you can see, it was quite a challenge. Thankfully, we had a nice Toyota four-wheel drive to use. Once we got into Mali, the roads were very good, and it's a beautiful, beautiful area, southern Mali. Southern Mali, at least to this point, is a safe enough area to travel through. Northern Mali, back in 2012, was taken over by a number of jihadist groups, and is still a very unsafe and unstable area. We traveled to Bamako. This is the city of Bamako, which is the capital of Mali on the Niger River. And there we met with the regional security officer at the American Embassy, who gave us quite a dismal picture of the security situation, particularly in northern and central Mali. Now, we don't have missionaries working in Mali. We do have missionaries in Burkina Faso. Well, we did have, and I'll explain that in a minute, in the town of Bobo-Dioulasso, which is quite a mouthful, but that's the second largest town in Burkina Faso, Bobo-Dioulasso, after the capital, Ouagadougou. We had a number of missionary families who were based here and working on getting out into some of the villages there in Burkina Faso to reach unreached people like the Bolong and the Vigé people. And we actually stayed with one of the missionary couples living there in Bobo, and did some security training with our group of missionaries there. We also visited two of the villages where they were just getting ready to move in. This was a Vigé village where we had two single ladies who were preparing to move in. At that time, their houses were almost done. And so we did a security assessment, not I, but actually the two men from our headquarters did a security assessment on the buildings and the sites, and made some suggestions for improving security. And again, the girls, the two single ladies, were planning to move in within the next few months. We met with the chief of the village and some of the elders and just explained our concern about the security situation there. The Vigé people are an unreached people group. That is, that they've never had the opportunity to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ in their own language. And they're animists. That is, that they follow their own African traditional beliefs. We also visited a village where the man in the black t-shirt was building his house. This was his house under construction. He and his family, as well as another missionary family, were planning to reach the Bolong people, another unreached people group there in western Burkina Faso, not far from the border with Mali. And so they visited his house. They did a security assessment. He had the green light for finishing his house. And so we went ahead, and that house did get finished. These Bolong people, these Vigé people, and there are other people groups, a number of other people groups in Burkina Faso, despite a large missionary effort, particularly of the Christian Missionary Alliance, are still unreached people in that they have not yet had the opportunity to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ in their own language. And we did visit with a number of the different people there. The missionaries who were wanting to move in had a real burden to see these people still have a burden to see these people reached with the gospel, so that these children would be able to hear someday soon in their own language about God who sent his son Jesus Christ to die for their sins on the cross and rose again. Unfortunately, the security situation in Burkina Faso has continued to deteriorate. The number of attacks by jihadist groups in Burkina Faso has tripled. In fact, I have a WhatsApp message. I get a security message pretty much every day that I can connect to the internet here from our security team. And an update on the situation. One of the things that I noticed particularly in going around there was the increase, the large number of people like these two women who were veiled wearing a motorcycle. That's indicative of Salafist, the influence of Salafist Islam. Salafist Islam is a very orthodox, fundamentalist, if you will, form of Islam that emanates from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, the Gulf countries, and it's that brand of Islam that breeds jihadism. Not all these people are jihadis, but all the jihadis are basically from these Salafist roots, taking the Quran literally and waging jihad. So we've seen an increase, they've seen a big increase in the number of people actually subscribing to this form of Islam, the Salafist Islam. And as a result, large amounts of Burkina Faso have now been considered no-go zones. The red area all around the borders with Mali and Niger, this is from the French, government. The French, of course, the colonial power in Burkina Faso as they were in Senegal, and they warned their people that these red areas, even the orange areas where you find Bobo-Dioulasso, where we were, and the Digue village that we visited was right up here, not the Digue, the Boang village, was right up here in this, in the red zone. And, Fortemont de Conseillé, that is very much, discouraged any kind of travel. This French discouraged their citizens, any kind of travel in these border areas because of the risk of kidnapping, of attacks. Just to read you a statistic in the, particularly in the area of the north, the town of Djibo, which is where Dr. Ken and his wife were kidnapped. In these areas, the jihadists have caused the displacement of 47,000 people because of insecurity. 96,000 students have been affected by the closing of 742 schools. They don't believe in Western education. They force schools to close. They either kill the school teachers or chase them out. And so they're really bent on taking over, just as they took over in northern Mali. Now they're taking over in, or trying to take over in Burkina Faso as well. 105,000 people affected by the closure of 4 health centers. Only 7 health centers in this vast area, and there are very few medical workers compared to the needs of the population, and they forced many of those to close. The 7 that are working at minimum, and by 2019 they feel that 1.2 million people will need emergency assistance there in Burkina Faso. Yes, Pastor Joe.
Is the red area continuing to grow? Is it stagnant right now?
They're having attacks. I get updates. They're having attacks in areas where they've never had attacks before, over towards Tendekokodo and Pama, these areas here. Those, just a year ago, the red area was just in the north. Okay, so these are definitely increasing. And because of this, In September, the security team in the United States made the decision to relocate all our missionaries from Burkina Faso. And the last family, actually the only family, the other families were on home assignment. There was one family living, they just moved into the Boang village up here, and they have now left the country as of, October or early November, I guess it was, and are going to be working in South America for 2 years to see whether or not the security situation stabilizes. So all of our missionaries are now out of Burkina Faso. So we ask prayer, for the security situation there in Burkina Faso, that the government would be able to get a handle on the situation. It's very, very difficult. They don't have the means financially. They don't have the means as far as military. And these people are coming in from Niger. They're coming in from Mali. There are actually now homegrown jihadist groups there in Burkina Faso as well. So it's a very concerning trend there in Burkina Faso. And again, we ask your prayers. We ask that you continue to pray for our friend, Beatrice Stockley. Beatrice was kidnapped in January of 2016. As far as we know, the last word we heard on her was from July of 2017 in a proof of life video. We have not heard any word since. As far as we know, she's still being held hostage by the Al-Qaeda group there in Mali. And Dr. Ken Elliott, who would now be 84 years old, still being held hostage. He was kidnapped about a week. He and his wife were kidnapped a week after Beatrice. She was released after 3 weeks. But he is still, as far as we know, being held, along with several others who are not missionaries, but they are still holding Dr. Ken and Beatrice hostage. So we ask your continued prayers for them. We'd love to see that as God answered our prayers for Alice and released her, we'd love to see Beatrice and Dr. Ken be released as well. So we appreciate your prayers for them. The security situation in Senegal is normally quite stable. Normally, things are peaceful and calm. But back in May of this past year, May 2018, we had some serious rioting at the University of Dakar. And I took this photo from the top of our building. This is
the top of our guest house right here. This building that you see there and that air conditioner, that's the top of our guest house. And so the University of Dakar is literally a stone's throw away. And you'll see why I say a stone's throw in a minute. But that's the one of the main buildings of the University of Dakar. The main entrance is there. And that round point was taken over by the students. The police came down to try and disperse them. Actually, up in the town of St. Louis, we have a St. Louis in Senegal. They call it Saint-Louis. But it's a former colonial capital. They'd had a student riot earlier in the day, and a student had been killed. So the students at the University of Dakar went out on strike in solidarity with the student that had been killed. And the police came, and it got very intense very quickly. That day, we had no inkling that anything was wrong when I came to the office that day. But I'm thankful that I parked inside our compound, and I'll show you why in a minute. This is a police vehicle right here, that black smoking hulk. That was a police vehicle that had an accident, a head-on accident with another police vehicle, and they abandoned it there. The students burned it. There were burning tires. There was tear gas. The streets littered with stones. This was right in front of our guest house back in May. The reason why I'm glad I didn't park my car outside is the students came down. The police eventually retreated because they were outnumbered. The students came down the street and burned, just destroyed and burned any vehicle that was parked on the street there. Didn't matter who it belonged to or that they had nothing to do with the university, but they burned several vehicles, probably 8 or 10. We did receive some damage. We had some stones thrown at our building, which is the first time I can ever remember that happening. Normally, we're not connected with the university. They don't bother us, but they did break some windows on our guest house, and the rioting continued the next day. They burned several more vehicles the following day. That day, I left our car at home. I took a taxi and walked part of the way. But it was a very, very tense time. We were concerned that they might even try to breach our gate because a policeman had taken refuge inside our compound, and we were afraid they were going to come in looking for him. So we locked down, and as I said, it was a very traumatic time. We actually all got some kind of post-trauma counseling as a group, a debrief because of this. So the security situation there in Senegal can be tentative too, so we do appreciate your prayers for our safety as well. Normally, it's pretty safe, but we appreciate your prayers because things can change very quickly. This young couple runs our guest house, and it was very difficult for them, during that time, especially because she was 8 months pregnant. But the following month, Debbie was able to help her, deliver her fourth child. And we praise the Lord for them. They are in the States now. His mother is quite ill, and but they run our guest house. They're a real great young couple, and so Debbie's been able to be a help with her medical skills in many ways. She occasionally has opportunities to give shots. Of course, she's a registered nurse, and she doesn't typically do medical work on a routine basis, but we have some friends who are very, very poor. They couldn't afford vaccinations. And Debbie's dad, with his CanDo ministry, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a minute, provided for the vaccines that they needed. And of course, Debbie gave the shots that they were very happy to receive, even though they don't look like it.
We had a visitor on last December. Debbie's dad, Alan McGaffick, came to visit us for 3 months. He was the first one of us, of our family, to arrive in the new airport. This is about 50 kilometers south of Dakar now. So it's a little bit further to go away, to get to the airport, a brand new airport there in Jos, Senegal. But he came to visit us. And on Christmas Day, we invited some of our Muslim friends to come to our house for the afternoon. We served, Debbie had made some cakes, and there were some other goodies and things. We had some other friends in and shared the story of Christmas with them, why we celebrate Jesus Christ celebrate Christmas rather as the birth of Jesus Christ, our Savior, in French. And of course, afterwards, they were all happy to have their picture with Dad in front of the Christmas tree. Debbie was able to have her dad help her with some of the printing that she had to do back in, what had that been, January? January and February. How many pages did you print?
That was 17,800
pages. That she was printing on a laser printer that we have in our program. Yep. And that was the Boudique Bible Teachers Manuals. Okay. In the Boudique, among the Boudique church, there are believers who are reaching out to other Boudique people with the chronological Bible teaching, and they had revised the teacher's manuals, and so Debbie reprinted them all, formatted and reprinted them all. It was hours and hours of work. And then Dad helped to collate them. Once she got them printed, he helped to collate them with they laminated the covers, and it was spiral bound, and so finally they were able to have the finished product to send out to the Boudique Bible teachers to use in their outreach to the other Boudique villages. So it was pretty exciting, and Dad was, he appreciates helping with that. Here they're doing, with one of our Bible translators, who's actually from Sayre, Pennsylvania, just a little, east of here, doing back to English checking. Is that right, Deb? So she and her dad were reading the scripture portion in English back to her, and she was checking it in Jalunga, which is the language that she works with. I'm not sure how it works, but it's an important step in Bible translation, and she's working on finishing the New Testament. So they were able to help her. You can see how cold it was there at that time. It was probably in the 70s. Dad's wearing a heavy flannel shirt. It gets cold there in Senegal. We get down to about 60 degrees. So I know you feel sorry for us, but in his spare time, we had him rolling bandages. We get people who donate used bed sheets and other pieces of material that can be torn into strips, and then he rolls it into bandages. So he likes to help any way he can when he's there. He has his can-do ministry that I think most of you are aware of, where he takes aluminum cans, collects aluminum cans, usually crushes them like he was doing there. He even found a few cans there. And also copper wire. He strips the insulation off it, and he recycles that and then uses the money to help with the vaccinations and other medical and needs like infant formula and things like that. So pray for her dad. He just had knee surgery about 6 weeks ago, but his recovery has been very slow, and he's hoping to come back to Senegal, perhaps in February, but he needs to get more back on his feet. He is walking, but the recovery's taking longer than he thought. He's also helped other people with various ministries. This woman is a Muslim background believer. Her name is Tatande Diouf. She has a prison ministry where she goes and visits particularly women in prison and encourages them and tries to share the gospel with them as well. And so he was able to help her with some of his can-do money. Helps support her ministry. And then also for the Boudique Church,
This is the missionary who is a senior missionary with the Boudique. He presented him, what, $1,000, wasn't it? That he had collected, some other people had given, and plus money from his can-do, his recycling, to help finish the Boudique church building that had been one of the missionaries had donated their old house. They had moved back stateside, but they donated their old house. They took the house apart brick by brick, moved it down closer to the village and to a more central spot, and reconstructed it, put new tin on the roof, put a chain link fence around it, set up solar panels, and so some of his can-do money went to help finishing that church building that will be used by the Boudique believers there. And, whoops, I'm missing a slide here. Oh, you know why? Before I speak. I'll do that. I'll show it before I speak. I'll cue it up with you before we go, because I wanted to talk a little bit about, it'll fit in with my message. So, we have 5 minutes, according to the clock there. George told me they put in that clock for me, so I could see it. I said I won't pay any attention to it anyway, but we have 5 minutes, according to that clock. Does anybody have any questions on our ministry there in West Africa, in Senegal, security-wise, medical, anything for Debbie about her ministry with scripture and literacy? Pastor Jeff.
So everybody talks about demographics, and they have workforces that are retiring and getting older, and there aren't enough younger workers coming in to follow them. Is it the same in mission work? Is there a shortage of younger people going into missions? And are they thinking about the first step of what the translation is? So are the younger people that are being raised up for that work?
Yes and no. There are younger people that are there now. We have coworkers that are young enough to be our kids, some of them, and maybe grandkids, some of them. And yes, they are there, planning to do the same or beginning to do the same thing that some of these people, like the gal who was translating, she's been there 35 years or more, working with the Boudique. Some of the, with the Jalunga, some of the ones with the Boudique were there nearly 40 years. And so they're in the early stages of doing that. But, unfortunately, there's not the number of people coming to replace those of us who are getting to the point where we're getting close to retirement. And Debbie and I, just to say, at this point, we don't have plans to retire yet. We're both 62, so, I know I don't look it, but but we're not planning to retire yet. Anyway, we still need more laborers. So if you would pray for laborers, there still needs more younger people. Yes.
Multiple times to come to Stanford to work at the headquarters of MPM Homes, so we hired to there.
We just haven't felt the Lord's leading in that direction yet, so. Yeah, so we need laborers. Yeah, George.
What's the percentage of literacy among these different people groups? With the increasing Muslim or the jihadist influence, is it getting less and less?
I'm not sure that that's having much of an effect, not in Senegal anyway. And actually, out in the villages, they're actually having more people become literate because the schools, there are more schools now, and the literacy rate among the younger people is much higher than it used to be. However, do you want to mention anything about that, Deb? Yeah. It's in Senegal, it's quite good compared to probably Mali or even Burkina Faso, Guinea. Senegal is higher than other countries would be because development has been continuing in Senegal. We haven't had the security, the insecurity problems nationwide like some of these other countries have, and there has been a lot of focus on literacy and development there. Yeah.
You know, if you translate it, and they can't read it. I mean,
exactly. And that's why, go ahead, Deb.
If the sign industry is working with us, they're learning an unwritten language, making an alphabet, getting it approved with the government, and then making primers to teach literacy if they're knowing. The schools were not being able to find the language. The schools are taught in French. But once the kids have learned to read French, they can learn to read their own language very much more quicker than the older people who don't know any of them.
Yeah.
Something to me that was interesting, people forget how to read because there's nothing else to read. So you have to keep things coming for them to be able to keep reading.
Yeah.
For the older people, it's very hard for them to read. So there is more and more scripture, more and more things on those little cards that people can put their phones on. One thing that's different too from when we first went out in the most remote villages, everybody has cell phones.
Smartphones, not just cell phones, smartphones. And so it's, in fact, one of the things that's been exciting, there's a couple, we're talking about retirement, this is kind of an opposite example. This couple is in their mid-60s, they're at least 65, both of them. They worked for many years in the southern part of Senegal with the Bainuk people. 17 years they worked, they learned the language, learned the culture, they taught the scriptures. The wife had started translation. But then because of their children, they're from England, and the children could only go so far in school there in Senegal. They finally had to go back to England to finish the children's education, the three girls. What's that? There was also a rebel movement in the southern part of the country that also forced them to leave the village. So they had to go back to England. They ended up back in England teaching at the Bible school, the New Tribes Bible School in England, for 17 years. So 17 years in Senegal, 17 years in England, retirement age. But their heart was still in Senegal. And so they finally found somebody to replace them in their teaching positions at the Bible school, and they came back to Senegal at age about 65. They came back to Senegal to work, to pick up where they'd left off 17 years before with the Bainuk people. They had recorded a lot of Bible teaching lessons, chronological Bible teaching lessons, when they were there the first time, and it's an interesting story. I won't go into it here, but those lessons have been lost. One day, actually, Debbie found those. It's an amazing story. But anyway, what was lost was found. They were able to get those lessons from CDs into MP3 format. And now they put them on SD cards and micro SD cards that people put in their telephones so they can listen to these Bible teaching lessons. And there are hundreds, thousands maybe, of people who are now listening. The work after they left, and there were some other team members on the team that just really struggled trying to get the language, and the work with the Bainu pretty much just died right out, or at least so we thought. And there were no longer any missionaries there, and it was just a considered basically kind of a dead work. But the embers were there, and the Holy Spirit was continuing to work in hearts, and with the scriptures now available, there are, like Debbie says, thousands of people listening to the scriptures in their own language, the Bible teaching in their own language among the Bainuk. And it's just a really exciting, and these are predominantly Muslim people. This is a predominantly Muslim people group.
I think our movement started is to have whatever the Bainuk is listening to on. Those who had it yesterday, now the Bainuk is trying to get Bainuk to listen to it. So it's kind of like that.
So very, very exciting to, and again, they're older, they're closer to 70 now, and yet they're still there wanting to see these Bainuk people reached with the gospel. She's working on translation, and so if you think of it, pray for the Bainuk work there, that God will indeed build his church among the Bainuk and these other people groups that have not yet heard. So, Rick, did you have a quick question? Yeah. No, there would be no electricity out there. There might be out by the main road. I think this is Bolong. I took this in the Bolong. No, this is the Vigay. I took this photo in the Vigay village. There may be electricity out by the main road, but they're a ways off the main road, so no electricity basically. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's firewood they're carrying there for cooking fires. What's that? Yeah, solar. Somehow they find a way to charge their phones, though. It's amazing. In the boutique village, the church has become a hub for that because they have solar panels and they have a little outlet there, and people can just come and charge their cell phones. So that's always busy, that little hub where people are charging their phones. So, yeah. Well, I think our time is up. Thank you again for your attention, for your prayers for us, and for allowing us to come and share today. We look forward to spending a little bit more time together during the worship service. Thank you, Pastor Jeff.